Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays at noon on 98.7 ESPN.
Get Han Solo. And with that, I try to bring on friends throughout the show to join me and help me through the show and help me through some conversations. And so to do that right now, we bring in Mike Tannenbaum, of course, our resident general manager, our front office insider, our expert in all things NFL. And Mike, I couldn't help today on Get Up. So I wasn't in on the football segments, of course, but I always like to listen in. And I feel like I'm almost surprised about your pessimism when it comes to the Jets this season. And could you explain, like, what is the source of the pessimism about a team with their defense and adding Aaron Rodgers that has you feeling like, while we're all just, you know, ready to have a parade, you're telling us not so fast? Where does it come from?
Yeah, I would say it's more guarded optimism than just, you know, extreme jubilation, right? Which is, it's always going to be about up front. You know, speaking of the Jets, my first draft as their general manager, we drafted DeBrickashaw Ferguson and Nick Mangold, and those were two building blocks for the next decade. And if there's an Achilles heel for this team, unfortunately, it's up front. And look, there's some variations about Vera Tucker and things like that, but you know, on paper, it's Mekhi Becton and it's Dwayne Brown. One guy's played in one game, and the other guy's 38 years old. So it's going to be about protection for Aaron Rodgers. If anything does this team in, it's going to be up front, and that's where my concern is.
Yeah, so it's basically about it's not, I guess, issues at offensive line. It's more the concerns about an offensive line. Does the fact that, and I know the GM in you is going to smirk at this, the fact that Mekhi Becton is in a contract year, like, change anything at all? Is there this very interesting motivator that certainly shows up knowing that Mekhi Becton is looking at, all right, it's time for me to earn a new contract? And would any of that make you say, well, you'll probably get a good year out of him?
Well, look, you certainly hope so. You know, and then those are great problems to have. Like, if he's motivated by a contract, Alan, great. Like, we'll take motivation in any way we can get it. But the point is, it would be irresponsible to sit here and say, hey, we got a Hall of Fame quarterback, an all-time great in Aaron Rodgers, and we're going to count on him, because the one thing that, you know, Mekhi Becton has shown is he's not reliable. And when he's being backed up by a guy that's 38, that's where the concern lies.
All right, so with that in mind, when you look overall at the Jets and the addition of Aaron Rodgers, because you were part of, and we've talked about this many times, you were part of bringing in Brett Favre. Is there a difference between the two with that experience and this experience? If there is, what is it?
I think the biggest difference really is the timing. You know, we got Brett in early August, and the concern was he didn't know Brian Daboll, our quarterback coach, or Brian Schottenheimer, our coordinator, whereas, you know, Aaron's here in March and knows, obviously, Nathaniel Hackett very well. So now it's about chemistry with his teammates, and I love the fact that he's there for the off-season program. I think that's really meaningful. And you could look at the improvement that the Packer offense had by month last year. And when you have young, skilled players, it's important. So that's great that he's here. And beyond that, I think there's a lot of similarities. You know, the other thing, and Alan, you know this market, I would be concerned that, you know, when they go on the inevitable bump in the road, there'll be something that happens, you know, that Aaron has to understand, like, you know, we're not in Green Bay, and when it's great in New York, it's great. When it's not, it's really bad.
Yeah, when it's not, it's awful. It's not that it's really bad. It's awful. Like, and so with that, like, I looked at the schedule, and we played this game when the schedule came out, Bart and I did. And just, by the way, just so you know, Bart has them winning 13 games. Just wanted you to just throw it out there. He has them. We went through the whole schedule. He goes 13. And DiPietro has them at 12 wins. So the two of them are, like, they full belief in – that there aren't going to be many bumps in the road. But when you look at the start of this season, though, and it's obviously a gauntlet. I mean, it's tough. I mean, obviously, you know, Bills start the season at Cowboys. You do get, you know, the Patriots, but it's still a divisional game. Then you play the Chiefs. Then you're at Mile High Stadium. Then you got the Eagles. You know, then you get a bye week, and then, oh, here come the Giants. When you look at the way this schedule starts, is that, like, also a bit of a concern that it is such a gauntlet out of the gate that, you know, you mentioned the stumbles and little things that can happen, that even if they are that competitive but haven't won, can things sour that quickly just based on the fact that the expectations are so high?
Yeah, I would like to think they won't sour quickly. But that goes to the importance of him being in Florham Park now, which is a great sign that he is, because you're playing teams like, you know, Buffalo's been together for a long time. A lot of those teams you talked about, the nucleus has been there for a long time. You know, Sean McDermott, Josh Allen, and those are consequential games. They're a game and a half. When you get into, you know, things like tiebreakers, all those things, you know, really, really matter. So I'm encouraged by what's happening so far, but the expectations are going to be high no matter how much you're going to hear Robert Saleh talk all summer about it's one game at a time and, you know, it's just the next season. Like, not all seasons are created equal, and they have a great opportunity, but it's just, I hope he understands, you know, what Aaron Rodgers has to have a real sense of, like, what he's signing up for. And It could be great. And if they win a championship, it'll cement his legacy, certainly surpass that of Brett Favre's. But, you know, this is an all-in move for everybody involved, you know, starting with the quarterback.
Yeah, and again, this is the honeymoon. So this is the best part. Like, I heard you making reference to, you know, he's courtside at games. He's showing up at different events. You see him everywhere, and this is the honeymoon. Everything's great because we haven't played a game yet. So there's nothing to nitpick, but it's when we hit week one. It's September 11th and forward that things are going to get real around here, and then that's when you got to get down to business. So as I put your GM cap on, look at this team, and with obviously another wave of sort of free agency and moves and players getting cut, they do have some cap space. They still have to take care of Quinnen Williams, obviously. But if you put on your GM cap and you're looking at this team, what more can Joe Douglas do to at least get this team closer to being a contender to believe in?
Yeah, I think he's done a really good job overall. Again, I would be looking at different permutations of the offensive line, you know, during training camp, and, you know, does somebody come free? You know, some teams have a little bit more depth than others. So, you know, that would definitely be the position to monitor. And look, from the Jets, I hope that Mekhi Becton turns into the player we thought when we drafted him, you know, top 11. And, he certainly has the ability. He just can't stay healthy. So I'm just monitoring that position, not only internally, but certainly externally, Alan.
Speaking of the offensive line, Mike, we're talking with Mike Tannenbaum. Is Tippmann, who they drafted in the second round, is he starting quality? Like, is that somebody that you think could plug right into as a starter, or is that a difficult thing to ask of him?
Yeah, I like him. And he'll play early if he starts, great. If not, you know, he's certainly a guy that's going to add to the quality of the, you know, top eight offensive linemen, which is really like what you need to, at a minimum, to get through the season is eight, and he should be one of them. So, again, I like the depth. It's just you don't want to have somebody cut their teeth when you have a legend, again, under center who's obviously closer to the end of his career. So, but Tippmann should play. Even if it's not from day one, I think this could turn out to be a really good pick by the Jets.
Yeah, talk about, right, get baptism by fire. I mean, you're snapping to an all-time great in your first NFL game. What a moment that's got to be for him. Switch gears, if we can, to the Giants. What do they need, if anything? Like when you look at the Giants, what are they missing, or what do they need to make last season not like something that was an aberration, oh, well, they're going to take a step back, but maybe that they can now challenge Dallas and Philadelphia? What do they need?
Yeah. Look, I think their offense should be better. You know, could they use another receiver? Possibly, but I like Jalen Hyatt a lot. You know, I think Banks will play right away. They desperately need a corner. So they need the young guys that they drafted who I think are good players to play and play well early. You know, baptism by fire, you know, for a receiver and a corner, especially a corner, isn't ideal, but they're going to need those guys to contribute right away.
What's their strength? Like, when you look at them, I always thought teams to me are all about identity. Like, what are they? What's their base? Like, you know, this is what we're going to have to deal with when we see this team. Have they developed that with Brian Daboll yet?
Yeah, I think they don't, you know, and he has a lot of, you know, influence from Nick Saban and Bill Belichick, and both those guys stand for, like, we're not going to beat ourselves. Like, you know, I had the great fortune of working for Coach Belichick twice. Like, he talks all the time that in football, in the game of football, Alan, teams will lose games before you ever have to win it. And they were exactly that a year ago. And I think the other thing they do, like when you talk to other defensive coordinators around the league, you know, they really stress you horizontally with both Saquon and Daniel Jones. That's hard for a defense because, you know, you're worrying about, you know, vertical threats and, you know, got teams hitting home runs. But the way they can pressure you horizontally and make you defend the width of the field, that's hard to do.
And mentioning Saquon Barkley there, obviously nothing is done yet on that front. What would you do if you were Joe Shane? How would you handle this? Because it's gone quiet again. And, you know, they obviously had to pay Dexter Lawrence. They did. They paid the quarterback. They had to do that. They did that as well. We see what's going on with running backs now. We understand that what running backs were 5-6 years ago on the market versus today, it's a much different mentality. Is Saquon, did he just come too late in this whole scenario where Gurley got paid and Zeke got paid and McCaffrey got paid, but now there's this, that's not really a smart investment. We probably shouldn't do it. What would you do if you were Joe Shane in the situation with Saquon Barkley?
Yeah, just be patient. That's really all you need to be is to be patient. And for all the reasons you just said, Alan, like, those big deals have not worked out. Now, look, I think Saquon's a great player because I think he's so dynamic out of the backfield. I think he's a great pass catcher out of the back. I think he's a great player. He'll get a good deal. I just don't see this market going up to the $16 million a year where McCaffrey said it. You know, I don't think you need to do it. And, you know, Tony Pollard and Josh Jacobs, candidly, Alan, are in very similar situations, you know, both with, you know, the Raiders and the Cowboys.
Is it just easier? Do you think we'll get to that point? It's just easier to just draft a running back every 4 years and just plug in,
yeah,
you know, do
question.
It that way?
I mean, Alan, look at Dallas, right? You know, Zeke's graduating, and they're going to be better on offense. You know, Tony Pollard's the better football player. And, you know, Zeke, the mistake about Zeke wasn't drafting him in the first round. The mistake about Zeke was giving him that big extension. I think Saquon's different because I think he's a little bit of a better athlete than Zeke was. But that's where I think teams are heading is let's get, you know, running back every other year, get 3 or 4 great years out of him, and then, you know, put those resources into other positions.
So if you're the Giants, then are you going to like just go franchise tag for this year? Or do you try to, like, convince him? Because I think what was the latest report was it 13 with incentives to get to 14, and he even scoffed at that? Like what's the best? Like, again, I'm trying to figure out, like, what is the best deal? Or is it just do the franchise thing and just wait another year and see what you get out of him this year?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's really on your terms. It's a little bit like if you can minimize the guaranteed money. Look, he's a great player. He's a locker room leader. There's a lot of value you want in Saquon. I just think it's one of these things where if the guarantees get exorbitant, you know, play from strength and do it 1 year at a time, that's not ideal. I mean, you want to have a chance to compete for the playoffs again. You don't want one of your best players not there, so that's worth something. I don't think it's worth a lot, but, you know, again, it goes back to what you said a couple minutes ago. You look at Zeke, you look at McCaffrey, you look at Gurley, you know, those deals just got upside down quickly, and I think that's why it's important, you know, the structure of these deals, flexibility in subsequent years is so important.
Do you put any stock, though, into like Micah Parsons, who a couple of weeks ago was pretty vocal about, you know, when we play the Giants, we plan for that guy. We plan for Barkley. We don't plan for anybody else. He is their offense. And so if you don't – let's say you don't have him. Whatever happens, like there's a scenario where Saquon Barkley is not part of what you're doing. Is there a danger there for the Giants to suddenly see what life is without that kind of threat back there? And does it expose Daniel Jones now? Like is his value in maybe what he brings? I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Did what Micah Parsons say, does that make sense in any way?
Yeah, and that's why you franchise him. You know, again, like if you took the position off the back, Alan said, hey, this guy is an offensive weapon. You know, you look at him differently than saying he's a running back, but I think Parsons is speaking the truth, which is when you walk in on Wednesday morning to start game playing for the Giants, you know, job number one, if you're the Cowboys or any other team for that matter, is stop Saquon Barkley. And there's real value to that. Like, he's going to get paid well. It's just, it's degrees, and it gets back to guaranteed money. And that's really where I think clubs are focused. And I don't think it's, you know, by accident that, you know, 3 running backs have been franchised.
Yeah. What do you make of them making the trade for Darren Waller? Is it a bit of a gamble because of the injury history, or do you like it?
Yeah, I think the risk-reward makes sense. You know, he can make Daniel Jones a better football player. He should be an outlet. You know, again, you talk about him and Barkley together. That's a pretty good combination, Alan, you know, just in terms of, like, checkdowns, getting the quarterback's completion percentage up. If he can stay healthy, he's a tough mismatch for opposing defenses.
Now, you've got – I think you've got Dallas winning the division, right? That's who you're picking right now?
I have Philly winning the division. My point I was trying to make this more was in a one-game series, I think Dallas can beat Philadelphia. You know, if it's 4-7, I think Philly's clearly the better team. But, you know, this isn't basketball, and I think – you know, we saw what when Dallas plays their A game, they're really hard to beat. That's why I was disagreeing with Chris Canty before. Yeah. But I think over a course of a season, Philly is a better team. But if we get into the playoffs and those two teams meet, you know, one game, Dak could easily outplay Jalen Hurts.
How about – CeCe doesn't have Dallas even making the playoffs. That was a strong take by him.
Yeah.
You mentioned NBA, and I know you follow the NBA. So before I let you go, I do want to ask you this because you brought up Bill Belichick, you brought the whole Patriot thing. And when you look at the Miami Heat and you see that that's been the same coach now for a long – he's the most tenured coach now, he and Pop, right? But like Spo has been there, and he's been there through an 11-30 start to a season. He's been there even this season when they were a play-in team that looked like they were done. They lost their first game in the play-in. And we're on the verge of being eliminated. And now all of a sudden they're one win away from the NBA Finals. And we always talk about this whole Heat culture thing. And I said this about the Heat. And when I brought it up, I'm trying to think of who it was that brought up that. Oh, it was Damian Woody, who would know. And he said that's just like playing for Bill Belichick in New England. It's that it's not about the stars. It's not about the brand names. It's this is our style of play. Who fits it? And we trust our coach and his system, and it's just finding the right pieces to play the way we want to play, and you'll have perpetual success. Is there some type of correlation between what Bill Belichick and New England does and what you're seeing out of Miami Heat this season?
I think that's a perfect analogy. I love that. And when you watch the Heat, I think a couple of things come to mind. Is like, one, they never beat themselves. They don't have a lot of turnovers. And then you look at, like, just the way they've played Tatum and Brown, like, they're going to make somebody else beat them. And it's clear, like, right now the Celtics can't find a way beyond those guys that's going to be, you know, consistently scoring. And they're not shooting well from three. And, you know, Miami's been able to take advantage of it. They're the tougher team. They're the more aggressive team. They're the better rebounding team. And, you know, just up and down the lineup, all these guys that they're, you know, Duncan Robinson was dead. You know, he makes a little back door cuts and hits a couple of threes. It's one guy after the next. You know, some games it's Kevin Love, they're getting some mileage out of, then it's Kyle Lowry. And guys know that, you know, when they go there's going to be a certain role for them, and it's really remarkable. I mean, if you just drafted, if you took both teams, yeah, maybe you take Jimmy Butler one overall, but, you know, the next six or seven most talented players are clearly true. Boston Celtics. And it's really remarkable what they've done.
And it's right, and it's also the idea, like I said, it's not about stars and brand names, it's about fit. So they'll find undrafted players, they'll just see, all right, but there's something about them that fits the way we play, and they'll coach you up. They'll put you on the roster, and they'll work. Like, it's so similar to what New England has had done during their glory years, is, yeah, like, there's your Tom Brady, well, you need the Jimmy Butler, right? It's like the Dwayne Wade. It's like, you need that guy. You still need the one guy. But after that, you can plug in all these pieces based on, I found a player who has a lot of physical attributes that I like, and now I'm going to just teach him the way to play this way, and we'll get something at him for a couple of years. And it just feels like this is such a Patriots-type team with the maniacal Jimmy Butler playing the role of Tom Brady, and then everything else is all these pieces that understand their roles, know do your job or whatever it is. That's what they say up there. It's so similar to the success that they're having this year. That I just found it to be an amazing correlation. I'm glad you could see it that way. I don't think Bart would see it. I don't think he would understand what I'm talking about. But I'm glad you got to see it.
Well, yeah, no, it's really remarkable. Now, look, I don't think they match up well at all with Denver. I mean, I don't think anybody could beat Denver this year just as well as Jamal Murray's playing. And, you know, we'll see. But clearly they are the two best teams left standing. And, I think for Miami to have a chance against Denver, they're going to, Bam Adebayo is going to have to just play insane against, you know.
Jokic,
Jokic. And then, to me, like, Murray right now, you know, him and Butler, that'll be fun to watch. We'll see how Spoelstra matchups, but what Murray did the other night was unbelievable in game three in L.A.
Yeah. Well, you're going to watch tonight because it could be LeBron's last game in the conference finals. And they might never see him this far in the playoffs ever again.
Yeah. I heard that this morning. And it'll be, I think, gosh, the difference right now to me is I don't see the Lakers losing that game at home, whereas I could see the Heat closing out the Celtics in Miami.
Yeah, yeah, again, of the teams that you can see pushing the envelope in a down 3-0, it's amazing that Boston or all their talent is not the team we believe in. So we shall see. Mike, thanks so much. Always love talking to you. Appreciate the insight.
All right, thanks, Alan.
All right, Mike Tannenbaum, again, our front office insider, our expert and everything else on all things GMing. And you heard what he said about the Jets. Look, even the most diehard Jets fan, you can't push back. You gotta believe it. Now, my pushback was Mekhi Becton. So if you're just joining us, Mike Tannenbaum said his biggest concern for the Jets is the obvious one. It's their offensive line. Bart has said, what do you mean offensive line? They've got, and he's naming all the different guys. Mitchell, who's coming back from, he wasn't even injured, and Vera Tucker, and, Becton should be back. Dwayne Brown is back. Tippmann is the draft pick. You know, that they have all these different pieces that they should be good. And while I said, yeah, okay, they're there. But Brown is 38, decided to come back. Vera Tucker's coming off injury. Mitchell was good, yeah. Tippmann's going to be a rookie. And then Becton is the biggest wild card. The only thing you could say about Mekhi Becton when it comes to what do you think you'll get of him this year, and I'm rooting for him because I love the kid. You know, you love him. Great personality, cares. Very frustrated with how he was used. Bart was right. Bart brought that up. They used him the wrong way. You don't put him on the right side. You don't make him pull and run. But it's a contract year. Think about yourself. Put yourself in that situation. Does it hurt a little less when you know I could make some serious cash this year? Right? This is the year. If there's ever a year for you to ball out, it's this year. So you kind of feel like you're going to get your best out of a player in a contract year, when he knows this is my chance to get the Quan. So if you want to believe in Mekhi Becton, that's one reason, and you don't know him, this is your reason why to believe. Because money is the greatest motivator. 800-919-3776 is the number. And oh, by the way, ESPN, just quickly here, put out their FPI, Football Power Index. While their Basketball Power Index is getting shredded right now in the playoffs, because they had picked the Celtics, I think, like 97% to win the series. Yeah, how's that looking? Not great. But their power index right now, which is always obviously fluid, but as we have the schedule now set up, most of the rosters are fairly complete, the Jets rank sixth. Sixth. It's pretty strong. So they are top six when it comes to the ESPN power rankings. The Giants are 14th. Which is the top half of the league. That's very good. But the Jets, the Chiefs, Bills, Eagles, Bengals, Niners, then Jets when it comes to the FPI. How about best chance to win the Super Bowl? 12 teams have at least a 3% chance to win the Super Bowl, according to ESPN's FPI. The Jets have a 4% chance, according to FPI. That is tied with the Lions for 7. The Lions, I know. It's true. Eagles at 14%, Chiefs at 13%, 49ers at 11%, Bills at 9%, Bengals at 9%, Cowboys at 7%, and then the Lions and Jets at 4%, followed by the Ravens, Chargers, Dolphins, Jaguars, all at 3%.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays at noon on 98.7 ESPN.
You know what time it is, what part of the show it is right now. It is time for us to step aside and let the headline makers do the talking, the segment we like to call
Audio Files.
The Audio File.
Something a little extra when Ray Dinahan brings audio files to the stage. You gotta love it. Bart Scott out, little Han Solo. Dino stepping in to not only work the gong, but also the audio files part of it. We could also have callers do it too, which would probably take forever. Oh, that's by the way. I guess, guys, Tom, Ray, should we once again do the power hour with the callers?
Caller power hour, definitely.
Oh, of course.
Right? Caller power hour? Okay. I guess there's no one around the studio that would want to like step in and try it, right? And if no Peter Rosenberg or Don LaGreca or...
No, not right now.
We'll do the callers. It'd be probably, it's always more fun that way. So we'll get those calls set up a little bit later on in the hour. But right now, let's get into it. So both of the NBA conference finals in the playoffs are 3-0. History has told us we have never seen a team come back from an 0-3 deficit to win a series. History has also told us that we have never seen both conference finals end in a sweep. That hasn't happened. One or the other, but never both. Will it happen this year? I mean, if you look at one team, the Boston Celtics, they look dead in the water. You thought for sure last night, going into that game in Miami, after losing two games at home, that you would get the best game from Boston. Instead, you got the worst. They were down by 30 going into the fourth quarter. 30! That's as close to a must win as you could possibly have, and you're down 30. And on top of it, what do we make of the fact that Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, who had awful games, both of them awful, sat to start the fourth quarter down 30? Now you could say, well, they're down 30. Why are you going to play them? As a principle. Marcus Smart played the first 4 minutes of the quarter. He came in. He played. Do you want to see your supposed leaders, but your best players, in a 30-point blowout, kind of wear it a little bit? You know? Like, don't go hide on the bench. No, coach, no. Down 30, I don't care. Let's go. We're out here. We're going to get something out of this. We got to get right. But instead, they sat on the bench. So there's a lot of blame to go around about what the hell's going on with the Celtics team, which all playoffs long has kind of been fumbling around. But we've always pointed first to their young head coach, Joe Mazzulla. And Joe Mazzulla has pushed back a lot on the criticism of him. But last night, he was not pointing fingers. He was pointing the thumb.
I just didn't have him ready to play. I should have, whatever it was, whether it was the starting lineup, whether it was an adjustment, just I have to get them in a better place, ready to play, and that's on me.
Is this fireable? Like, when do we reach the point with this head coach who was given, he was an interim tag, was taken off him during this season? Let's remember the story now. Back in the fall, right before the training camp began, I mean, a just absolute bombshell of a story hit that their head coach, Ime Udoka, who had just taken them to the NBA Finals in his first year as a head coach after replacing Brad Stevens, that he got into all kinds of issues with conduct within the organization with a female employee, And so he had been suspended and then eventually fired. And, well, not fired, I should say. They suspended him and then they let him go ahead and interview with other jobs. But Joe Mazzulla was an assistant. They made him the head coach. And for the start of the season, things looked like it was going well, that they weren't going to miss a beat. But in the playoffs, he's been over his head. So now the question up in Boston, I told you, everybody, watch this now, is that, do they stick with him or do they realize that this isn't the right guy? And if it's not the right guy, then what do you do? Do you have a fourth head coach in 4 years? Do you really do that? Do you say to yourself, we can't go forward like this. We have got to make a change. And if you do, who's it going to be? So something to watch. But Joe Mazzulla was pushing back a lot on some of the criticism of him, but he can't push back anymore. Meanwhile, in the other conference finals, which is also 3-0, the Denver Nuggets have that lead, a commanding one, after Saturday night's big win in L.A. Tonight is game 4. You can watch it on ESPN. And tonight, of course, I've said, could be the end, the last we see of LeBron James at this level of the playoffs. It could be if they lose. LeBron James has only been swept, I think, twice, right? And both times were in the NBA Finals. He's never been swept other than in the NBA Finals. And so we'll see if he can hold off, he and the Lakers, of course. Anthony Davis, show up, please. And see if they can force at least a game 5 to save the indignity of a sweep. But while we keep talking about the Lakers, you know what we're not talking about? The Denver Nuggets, who are really good. And as I mentioned earlier when we were talking about Carmelo Anthony and his retirement, is the best piece that Denver got in that trade for Melo was a draft pick that led to Jamal Murray, who was a phenomenal young player, lit it up in the bubble, blew out his ACL. He has come all the way back since then. But Michael Malone, the head coach of the Nuggets, told the story about how Murray went through some dark times once that injury hit him, including him thinking his days in Denver were over.
I remember being in the bus with him, going to the airport after he did the injury in Golden State the next day, and he had tears in his eyes. And that was the message. Hey, man, you're going to come back from this, and not only are you going to come back, you're going to be better. And that's in that moment, it's really hard to believe that. His first thought was, man, are you guys going to trade me? And that was his, I'm damaged goods. Are you guys going to trade me now? And I hugged him. I said, hell no. Like, you're ours. We love you. We're going to help you get back, and you're going to be a better player for it. And I think what he's doing in these playoffs is just a reminder of a guy that we drafted 7 years ago that has continued to find ways to improve and really show out on the biggest stage in the world.
You love stories like this, right? I mean, just you believe in a kid. You know he can do it. You want to get him through the injury. ACLs are not, they're not a death sentence like they used to be. You can get all the way back. And they were patient as a franchise. They were patient with him. They were also patient with Malone. Again, let's remind everybody of that story. A young group that went through some pain early. Sound familiar? Had a head coach that, was a tough, hard-driving coach. And he was tough on the media. And they were tough on him. And you could have fired him, too. They stuck together. Let the young players grow and learn. A couple of guys had to get through the injury. Now here they are on the verge of the franchise's first appearance in the NBA Finals. It's a great story happening there in the game, certainly tonight. 8:30 p.m. is the tip-off. Lakers, Nuggets, Game 4 in L.A. Meanwhile, the Mets, all of a sudden things starting to turn for the baseball teams, and boy, do we need to see this start to happen. So we'll start with the Mets. They have won 5 straight games. And they are just 5 games back. They're over 500 by a couple of games. And they do so with Francisco Lindor and company beating Lindor's former team, the Cleveland Guardians, over the weekend. They get the sweep on yesterday, I should say, because he had the rain out on Saturday. And this is what you get. You get the Scherzer-Verlander back-to-back. You get a little split doubleheader. And it was everything you'd want to see as a Mets fan. And Lindor, also looking like the star that's paid the way he is. And for Lindor, yeah, this was a great weekend.
Overall, it was great baseball for the New York Mets, and we stuck together. And, yeah, now we are on a high right now. We just got to try to continue to stay in the high, celebrate each other's success, and then turn the page, focus on the Cubs. As soon as we land in Chicago, focus on the Cubs.
Right, and that's what's next for the Mets is the Chicago Cubs. So see if they can keep it rolling. But five straight for the Mets, and you heard the guys talk about it this morning on DiPietro and Rothenberg, and Rico believes firmly that the Mets are back. They got it. Whatever they were going through early on, they shook free of it, and they're starting to figure it out, and that's a great sign. But the pitching, obviously, is everything, and what you saw at Scherzer and Verlander yesterday has got to make you feel a lot better about things after a couple of weeks ago, how bad things really looked. All right, now it's time. Here we are in Audio Files. Let's get a little pinstripe report. It's brought to you by Samwell Institute for Pain Management. So while the Mets have been winning, so have the Yankees. They sweep Cincinnati over the weekend. They have won four straight. They're up to already 29-20. 5.5 games back all of a sudden. They were just 10 back in a blink. But they start a really big series tomorrow against Baltimore. So, of course, that is definitely something to keep an eye on. But this road trip that the Yankees just completed, the seven games, they won six of them. That's a pretty good road trip, Aaron Boone, right?
Great trip. Look, this is, it's been a tough stretch, you know, 33 out of 34, varying degrees of health. You know, we've gotten some guys back, but have been beat up. But I'm excited about how well this team is competing. Their level of, again, walk in with edge, prepare, and compete, and they're doing that at a high level right now. And, you know, we're going to continue to get hopefully healthier, and that'll continue to help us and make us stronger. But the way this group is competing has really impressed me, especially through a tough stretch, you know, where we finally get a day off and get to into the homestand, and hopefully we can do well there.
A promising start from Severino. And, oh, by the way, Aaron Judge. I mean, if you ever needed to see how last year wasn't that fluke and all that stuff. I mean, look, all the concerns about the contract and what you saw last season was it's one of the million kind of thing. You're going to be forced to now pay this guy. He made him the captain, and while things got shaky at the start of the season, once he got back off the injured list, how good has he been? It's tone setter, presence, all that. That's what you love, and that's what leaders do. That's what your stars do. Aaron Judge has been that and more for the Yankees. That's Pinstripe Report, brought to you by Samwell Institute for Pain Management for a pain-free life. Visit samwellpain.com today. All right, that's Audio Files. Thank you, Ray. Thank you, Tom.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays at noon on 98.7 ESPN.
Certainly a lot going on. A very busy weekend. You got Gary Sanchez now suddenly back in New York, but now with the Mets. You got the pitching on the Mets side of things finally calming down. You get a good weekend out of the Mets. You get a good weekend out of the Yankees. You got both teams feeling good about stuff. You got the Mets going into an interesting series with the Cubs. The Yankees going into a very interesting series with the Orioles. Normally own them. But this is a different Baltimore team. You get plenty of that coverage and more on the Michael Kay Show coming up, as you know, at 3 o'clock, like he does every day. But, I mean, all around the different topics that we have hit so far today, the one that I know that has really been interesting is the one that's going on tonight. And it is that the Lakers and the Nuggets are playing a game four that I'm telling you could be the last we see of LeBron James in the conference finals. Now, this is not hate. This is not just trying to find a reason to nitpick LeBron. This is not about that. It's a reality, man. Like, Carmelo Anthony today just retired. He's done. 19 years, called it a career, and it's like that end of an era. Like, I'm over 50, so I've already been through the, you know, Derek Jeter retiring was that one that hit me. Like, when Jeter retired, you know, that's the one. Because you, like, when you're young and a player retires, you're sort of like, yeah, okay, he's an old guy. Like, you don't think much of it. Like, when Larry Bird and Magic retired, I didn't see it as, wow, I feel old. It was just more of, all right, you know, their careers kind of ended. Even when Jordan, it was so, like, unceremonious when Michael Jordan retired. because he had kind of come back, and then it was weird to see him in a Wizards jersey. Like, there's something strange about it. But the first time that I honestly, like, when a player retired, that it hit me was when it was Derek Jeter. Because, you know, we're like the same age. And, you know, those years that Jeter and the Yankees are winning championships and all, we kind of like just ran through that, took it for granted, just loved every minute, lived it up. You know, you just felt every year, you just felt like we had the best team in the league. You know, your team could win every year. It's a fun time, but it goes by in such a blink. And then the next thing you know, it's like 09. You're like, oh, okay. And then it's like, wait, Derek Jeter's retiring? You know, a couple years later, you know, like it just hits you. And that's when you feel old. Carmelo Anthony retiring is another one of those where, yeah, I feel old, but I already felt it. But how many other people, like, you're younger and Melo was the best years you knew as a... See, Patrick was the best years I knew as a Nick. So Patrick was another one of those unceremonious, traded away, weird to see him in a Seattle Sonics uniform, then even weirder to see him in an Orlando Magic uniform. And so it was like, I didn't want to, like, it's like the Joe Namath in the Rams jersey thing. Like, you didn't want to know that guy. I don't want to know that. So it's like, it doesn't count. But, you know, I always wondered how anyone else felt about a player's retirement. I don't know how you do this. You know, when we opened the show, it's the first thing I thought about was like, do we celebrate this? Like, how do we do this? Because it's, you feel bittersweet, melancholy. And it's a personal thing. It's not the player. Like, he's going to live plenty more years. He's got an unbelievable life. Like, it's nothing like that. It's just more of like you as a person. This is how we are with sports, is we kind of connect the players to our lives in ways that's like LeBron James tonight. I'll watch LeBron James like I watched last week, and I said on Get Up, and it, people got mad at me. Video went viral. And all I said was an instant answer to, what did you see in LeBron James after game two? I said, it's the first time I ever watched him and thought, he looks old. He looks old. He can't keep up. He can still make plays. He could still get you points. He's smart enough to get stats. But I don't look at a guy like that. Like, the Nuggets are playing a different damn speed. I've never seen LeBron not be able to play that speed. I've seen teammates around him not be able to. But I've never seen LeBron not be able to keep up. It's the first time I saw that. And then game three happened Saturday night, and I'm watching. I'm thinking, all right, LeBron now, because you know it got to LeBron. And I'm like, man, LeBron is going to make me eat my words. LeBron's going to come out, and he's going to look like Benjamin Button. And instead, he was all right. And that's not LeBron's standard. LeBron's standard is not all right. LeBron's standard is, you might lose the game, but he's the best player on the court. And he's not that. And so tonight, in the back of my mind, as I'm already thinking about the bittersweet, you know, Carmelo Anthony's career is over, and boy, what does that say about my life as I just keep getting older? Because these guys, you know, he played 19 seasons, and my profession was covering him for most of those 19 seasons. LeBron James, I mean, he's entered the league, played 20 years. This is a guy that it just felt like every year, death taxes LeBron in the finals. And this is like, is this as far as we're ever going to see him get anymore? Like, was this his last best chance to win a championship? Was this his last shot at number five? Number five, everybody. Number five puts you in very, very distinct company in NBA championship history. Magic Johnson. Like, think about that. Like, so you look at the Lakers going forward. You look at the league going forward. You ask yourself. You watch tonight. You're going to see. Oh, the numbers are there. Every now and then, he'll get a layup. He'll get a shot. He'll hit three. You know, he'll make an unbelievable pass. He can still run down the floor. I mean, the guy is just a tremendous athlete. He's smart. But you'll see it if you watch close enough. I don't think it's there anymore. He's going to play next year. He wants to play with his son one day. So he'll be 40 next year at this time. I'll be shocked if he's 40 next year at this time and he's on another run to the finals. Very difficult to do. A big ask for him to do. Then again, can they build a roster around him where he doesn't have to be that guy anymore? the force multiplier. Is Anthony Davis enough? Do you dare open the door for Kyrie Irving? Yeah, I said it. Wendy said it today. Wendy said it. Well, Brian Windhorst said it. Do they have the ability, because D'Angelo Russell hasn't been good enough, do they have the ability to go get Kyrie? And you sure you want to open that door? So watch tonight, if you are so inclined, and watch LeBron James. And then we'll see. Does he give us a glimpse? One more reach back, you know, reach into the hot tub time machine and be that guy that, you know he can be. That we saw, Dylan Brooks called him out, called him old. And then he shut that noise off. And then he went up against Steph Curry and the Warriors. He had to give him one big game. He got him one big game, one big triple-double game. But he got it. Now, tonight is about avoiding a sweep, the embarrassment, the indignity of a sweep. He has never known that outside of the NBA Finals. And it only happened twice in his life. Once to an unbelievable Spurs team when he was a kid, and the other time to a unbelievable dynastic Warriors team a couple of years ago, Kevin Durant. Right, that stuff was, you know, there's nothing he could do about that. This is the end. I hate those. So as fans, like I said, this is not about mourning players or the end of their careers and all that stuff. It's not about that. Because those guys are millionaires upon millionaires. They are going to live comfortably and happily. And in real life years, they're very young. But as fans, don't you connect to players like this in your life? And you look and then when you realize, like, man, they're old. It makes you feel old. Doesn't it?
Thanks for listening to the Bart and Han Show podcast. Listen live weekdays at noon on 98.7 ESPN.